You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
All right, I've managed to clear my mouth and most of my shirt from the crumbs of the banana cream pie Pop-Tarts. Thank you again, Moore. I loved them. That was
You're welcome.
Best.
Justin and I can't finish ours.
Yeah, you guys didn't like them. That's fine.
I'm not going to finish the second one.
But I agree with your comments. They do taste sort of like banana runts in Pop-Tart form. I think that's great. Sounds perfect. Absolutely love them. Exceeded expectations. 11 out of 10. If those weren't like the worst thing in the world for you, I would eat that every morning for breakfast and be happy. So good stuff there. I do want to get to this sort of great debate that I can't seem to find a coherent position on. I will also point out Adam Schefter tweeting a moment ago. I don't know if you saw this. Tom Brady has agreed to join Fox Sports as its lead NFL analyst.
Did see that.
Whenever he stops playing.
Yeah.
This according to Lachlan Murdoch just a few minutes ago. So Adam Schefter has that news. I can only imagine how much money they will pay for that. And again, sort of funny that it's Fox and not CBS, given that most of Brady's career was played on CBS, right?
Sure.
Playing for the Patriots in the AFC. But he will, became an NFC guy here in the last couple of years and apparently will go to Fox when it's all said and done and be their lead NFL analyst. Now, do you think that means in-game analyst or like play-by-play color guy?
They said he'd be working with Kevin Burkhart.
Oh, so wow. I assumed that it would be more of a studio thing. Like he'd kind of come in and not take over for Terry Bradshaw, but sort of, be the next lead guy on their studio show. But no, that's funny. It would never have dawned on me that Tom Brady would want to do that. He doesn't seem like somebody who would want to like spend every Sunday analyzing the game from the booth.
He also seems like the kind of guy that said when he wanted to get away from football to spend more time with his family. Maybe that wasn't quite the most true
right
thing.
Yeah, no, I don't want, I mean, this family? No. I mean my football family.
Right, like, into football.
I need a new football family to spend time with. So, well, good for Brady. He's already lined up another job. It's surprising. I thought that maybe he would kind of suffer through the unemployment line for a little while. But hasn't even left his current job, and he already has another one lined up, which is something you hear about all the time, that the best time to find another job is before you lose the one you've got. Right? It's easier to find a job when you have a job. And so, good for Tom Brady. He's managed to find his next one.
He needs the money, too, so good for him.
In my career, I don't know that I can think of a subject I've changed my mind on more often than whether or not the Seahawks should go after Baker Mayfield. I have changed my mind on this in my own head probably 30, 40, 50 times. I just keep going back and forth. I keep vacillating. And, maybe because I see a lot of merit to both sides of this, I did, I put through a little Twitter poll on it last night, just curious, without any real, evidence or argument behind it. Just, hey, what do you guys think? Who should the Seahawks have? Geno or, Geno and Drew or Baker Mayfield? And I mean, it's really even. I mean, it was 53-47 or something like that with a few more people anti-Baker, but that changed. Last night when I went to bed, it was like 52-48 in the other direction, so obviously that swung a little bit. I don't know, maybe it was retweeted by some non-Baker Mayfield influencers. It's hard to say. I don't know how that works, but I keep talking myself into the idea and then out of it again, and I think it's challenging because Baker is better than their current options. He's a better quarterback than Drew Lock. He's a better quarterback than Geno Smith.
Yes.
Right? I mean, can we all agree on that? I mean, maybe we don't. I mean, maybe there are folks that would disagree with that. But I think it's fairly clear that he is better than both of those guys. Just a flat-out better quarterback than either one of them. So, from that regard, to me, this one is that part is simple. I know I was looking. We have that Marcus Spears. We found a little bit more Marcus Spears, and I wanted to play it for you because he is so adamant that the Seahawks are not actually as enamored with Drew Lock as you think. Here's Marcus Spears. We played some of it the other day. Here's a little bit more.
Based on what I've seen from Drew Lock up until this point, the Seattle Seahawks are in a bad situation, okay? Geno came in when Russ was hurt and made some good plays. But let me not lie to the people like Pete Carroll going to do all offseason, all preseason, all camp. He going to tell us how great Drew Lock is and how much he's progressed and how good of a quarterback he's become. Boogie and RG3, I will believe it when I see the season begin.
All right, there you go. So he's not buying the Drew Lock or Geno Smith experiment. So I think we can agree that in a vacuum, Baker Mayfield's a better quarterback. It would give them certainly a better chance to win this year with this roster, to win sooner. And it also doesn't prevent them from going out and trying to get someone else next year. And by the way, maybe he works out and is your long-term answer at quarterback, and it turns out that the fit is great, etc. So, okay. I mean, like, I can write a pretty good script for why you should go after Baker Mayfield, especially because you don't have to give up that much in order to get him.
That's where I'm at. The downside feels minimal.
Heck, Peter King wrote today, probably smart for them not to take a flyer on Baker Mayfield. Unless Cleveland throws the Seahawks a fifth-round pick to take him and some of his salary off the Browns' hands. Barring that, I'd just let Drew Lock and Geno Smith handle quarterback in a restocking year with a big plus, taking the franchise tackle Charles Cross they could never find for Russell. Seattle could have four picks in the top 50 or so next year. So for the first time in recent Seahawks history, they'd be in position to draft one of the top quarterbacks from what is shaping up as a deep pool. That's the other side of this conversation, right? It's do you want to be back in the business of paying a quarterback big money, especially one who's not as good as Russ? Because that's what you'd be in after a year. Let's say you bring in Baker, it works out, and he has a fantastic year, and now you want to commit to him because he's your franchise quarterback. Well, now you got to pay him, right? Second contract money. Now he's looking for $25, $35, $40 million because he sees himself as a franchise quarterback. And now you're right back where you started from, except with a quarterback that's probably not as good as Russell Wilson. That doesn't seem like a great long-term answer, does it?
No.
Right? So I don't really want to do that. And by the way, all right, let's say Baker is better than Geno Smith and or Drew Lock. Let's say that with their current crop of quarterbacks, the Seahawks win five games this year. Does that sound right? Geno Smith and Drew Lock, they go 5-12. Does that sound accurate?
I've been saying 4, but 5, yeah.
All right, well, let's go with 4. We'll take, Justin, you're a negative person, as yeah. I've always told people.
Yeah. I just
let's go with
it.
Your number. Let's go with 4. Okay, now put Baker Mayfield on the team. What's their record?
Yeah, you're right. It's not a ton better. I'm thinking 7.
7?
Yeah.
Right? 7-10 instead of 4-13?
But at least it feels like you're trying.
Okay, but he's winning you 3 extra games that still keep you nowhere near the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Was that worth it? Was it worth it to win 3 extra games, lose out on a better draft position, knowing that there are some big-time quarterbacks who are going to be available at the top of the draft, 3 of them in particular? Were those 3 wins worth it?
Is it worth it to Pete? I mean, he's the always compete guy. We're never going to not try. We're never going to, I mean,
and you've got to present a lot of competition out there, and they are competing at the quarterback position. Those two quarterbacks will be competing with each other. I don't know if they'll be competitive related to the rest of the league, but there will be lots of competition on the roster. I don't know. I mean, they once had, you know, Charlie Whitehurst compete with Tavares Jackson. I mean, competition can be had at a lot of different levels. Are those, let's call them 3 extra wins?
Okay, but he did say in one of his offseason press conferences, like, we're trying to win a championship.
I know he says that.
I'm just saying it's not just compete. Like, he, so yes. Maybe he doesn't mean it, but.
Then you have, then if that's the case, you know, I don't know that Baker gets you to championship competition level right now either. Maybe he does. I mean, I still think the roster might be a year or so away from that. So if you think Baker Mayfield is worth an extra 6 or 7 wins over Drew and Geno, then you should pull the trigger on this. And quite frankly, if you got to pay a little bit to do it, you should probably go do it. If you think he's worth that, or at least like even at his high side, he's worth that, then you should go do that.
Mm-hmm.
That to me seems obvious.
I have a really hard time rooting for a higher draft pick next year.
Right, because if it gets you,
I have a really hard time swallowing
if it
that.
Gets you into the playoffs. Here's the thing: you either want to make the playoffs or you want to really miss the playoffs this year. Right, I don't see a ton of value in them finishing 8-9 and just missing the playoffs. You either want to be 10-7 and you get in as a wild card and you give it a run and you really start to build something special, or you probably don't want to be in it at all. And if that's the case, you're not tanking by having Drew and Geno. You're just not going after a quarterback in Baker Mayfield that probably has a lot of question marks about him anyway. So, I go back and forth on this. Send some text, 206-421-3776, the Mac and Jack's text line. If whatever you want to argue, I will argue the other way, and I'd feel very confident in doing so, because I think that you can make very, very strong case that they should go get Baker Mayfield and that they should leave him in Cleveland, not even take another second look. So that's where we're at. As I said, want your thoughts, 206-421-3776. 3776. We'll tell you everything you need to know coming up here in just a moment. And then we've got some significant faux pas for taking the L at 7:30. It's all coming up here this morning on the Mike Salk Show, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, we knew the Phillies lineup was deep. We knew they could do a little bit of damage. So Chris Flexen giving up a six spot in five innings wasn't necessarily the most shocking result last night. But not taking advantage of the starting pitcher, again, who hadn't had much success recently this year. Just an unfortunate continuation of what is now becoming a trend. 9-0 shutout at the hands of the Phillies. Completely non-competitive night just 24 hours after the big walk-off win. I know momentum is just the next day's starter, but come on. Scott Servais didn't sound too impressed.
Not a good night. There's not a whole lot of ways to spin this one. The Phillies came out, banged us around. We made some mistakes on the mound, and then they made us pay. They got a really good hitting lineup. We knew that coming into the series. You got to get ahead of count, you got to execute, and we weren't able to do that tonight.
Yeah, that's for sure. The bats ice cold right now, and while they are missing some guys, obviously Haniger, Crawford, Lewis, Murphy, etc., they're going to have to dig deep. They're going to have to string together some hits because getting shut out like this is obviously just not going to fly. Now, thankfully, that does come with a big and very wonderful caveat. Julio Rodriguez just stinging the ball, hitting it hard. 3-for-4 with a double last night, continues to develop into a legitimate threat, hitting the ball hard to all fields, using his legs as well to pressure the defense. Everything you're seeing from Julio right now has just been tremendous growth, and it hasn't taken him very long. It's like, oh, he had a whole bunch of trouble making contact in the first couple of weeks of his career. Don't worry, he'll just fix that. Now he's hitting .255, has obviously raised his average considerably. And oh, by the way, since Scott Servais got tossed defending him on the whole strike three calls outside the zone thing, he's only had one strike called outside the zone. So obviously something has gotten better there for Julio, which is great to see. Results are results. Mariners now are 13-17 on the season. Got two more against Philadelphia. Robbie Ray, Aaron Nola tonight, 6:40.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Yeah, I don't mean to make this a carbon copy of yesterday's need to know, but the praise does keep coming in for Seahawks rookie tackles. Pete raving about them right after minicamp, and yesterday John Schneider joined Wyman and Bob and essentially did the same thing, talking about the Charles Cross pick.
It was confident in the process. You know, everybody was really excited about Charles. You know, the athlete, talks about the pass protection. You can obviously see that, but the thing that really stood out with us was in the run game, a guy that can run his feet. Both these guys do it, Abe and Charles, right? They're just really good athletes too, so to have that upside in the run game, especially with Shane and Andy's system, so that was really exciting.
Yeah, it's he's right about that, and again, the athleticism was the thing that you noticed most. We'll talk to Shane Waldron tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock and hear a little bit more about that, but the potential implications of having two legitimate long-term bookends on the offensive line is enormous. It just makes everything else possible. It makes everything run more smoothly. The offense can run smoothly. The quarterback's job is easier. The running backs have bigger holes and can use their elusiveness in open space. It just, if you have an offensive line, everybody looks smarter and looks better. It's like WD-40 for your entire team. So great. I really hope that this works out the way everyone seems to think it will.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, big night in the NBA. Pair of comebacks. First in Milwaukee, the Celtics got up off the mat, refused to go down 3-1. Trailing by 7, end of 3, they outscored the Bucks by 15 in the fourth quarter en route to a win. 30 each for Tatum and Horford as they even up the series at 2 apiece. Now, if you've ever wondered which was more important, an NBA coach or a star player, yeah, we got the answer last night. No Steve Kerr. He tested positive for COVID. Didn't seem to matter. Warriors came back to beat a Grizzlies team because they were missing John Morant. 3-point win. They extend their lead to 3-1. NHL action as well. Colorado sweeps Nashville as expected. Penguins offense gets hot. They lead 3-1 over the Rangers. Florida and Calgary both win. They even up their series at 2 apiece. All right. Since we've been talking Pop-Tarts this morning, I wanted to read the other side of this box to you. If you're looking online. If you're watching us here on the stream at SeattleSports.com, you can, and there may still be crumbs on my shirt from where I earlier today ate one of these banana cream pie Pop-Tarts live on the air in what I think has to be a first for radio. I don't know whether you could go back and check the annals, but I believe no one has ever eaten a banana cream pie Pop-Tart live on the radio in the morning. So I'm pretty much the next Howard Stern.
I'm pretty sure it's banana creme.
And a creme.
You think that's what that E means? I think it's supposed to make it just that's where the accent is, but do they think it's a two-syllable word, like creme or something? But no, it's not creme, it's cream. Oh, okay. Thank God they put that little line there. No, I wanted to read you what was on the back, because I already read you the front says new exclusive flavor, which I think is funny. But the back says crazy good no matter how you love them, which, okay, there are a bunch of ways to eat a Pop-Tart. But they list four.
There are a bunch of ways to eat a Pop-Tart?
There are at least two that I would think of, right?
Toasted and untoasted.
So the first one is straight from the foil,
yeah,
right, which is what we did this morning. And, you know, as I've gotten older, kind of how I tend to prefer my Pop-Tarts. Two, toasted, mm-hmm, right? Now, I think those two made sense, right? Everyone would agree that there is straight from the foil and toasted.
Yes.
But they've listed two other ways to eat your Pop-Tart. So tell me what you think of these. Number three, stacked. So I assume that means taking the two Pop-Tarts that come in the package and eating them together like a cookie, like a sandwich.
Double cheeseburger. Wow.
I would not do that.
No. Okay.
That doesn't seem right. Plus, Pop-Tarts are so good. I really want to like draw out the excitement and the flavor, especially these banana cream ones are tremendous. So stacked is option number three. Care to guess what option number four is?
I have a guess, but I'm going to say like crumpled up in yogurt or something.
No, although that's an interesting guess. No.
Microwave?
You are not allowed to in any way anything healthy with your Pop-Tart.
You can't make these taste better.
No, it is not microwaved. I don't think they want them. I would assume they sort of deflate and just get soggy. No, frozen.
Oh.
Is that a thing? Do people freeze their Pop-Tarts and then eat them?
Ice cream?
Should we try it?
No.
What do you mean, no?
I know what they taste
like. We have 32 packages of Pop-Tarts here. You don't think we can take one for science and throw it in the freezer and figure out if it's good?
Fine.
Yeah.
Justin, we have 30. Now we have 29.
We can sacrifice some more Pop-Tarts.
Well, see, this is what we're doing. Sacrifice. It's all about sacrifice in order to help out the Mariners. All right. We'll be giving out some very serious and significant L's coming up next. We got all kinds of faux pas and something that happened on the radio that I'm still not sure I'm allowed to play. It's all next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710seattlesports.com.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
All right, we're getting a lot of Pop-Tart response, unsurprisingly, this morning. I did throw a pair of Pop-Tarts, a package of Pop-Tarts into the freezer, so we'll be able to see what it's like frozen.
Did you write your name on them? You never know what kind of vultures want a frozen Pop-Tart.
Good point. I figured we have enough. What with the 32 packages?
The fridge cleanout happened Friday, so we're probably
still kind of smelled in the fridge even after the cleanout.
It's true.
Some people suggesting that if you stack the Pop-Tarts, you can actually combine flavors, which is actually a pretty good idea. Like strawberry banana is an epic combination in general. What if you went one strawberry frosted, one banana frosted, and then stacked and ate them together?
You could do a Pop-Tart s'more.
Don't they already have a Pop-Tart flavor of s'mores?
That is a flavor, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's already a flavor.
Shoot.
Yeah,
oh, did you see this?
I was thinking marshmallow earlier.
The 425 continued the way you can
use really?
Them.
What else they have?
Dunked in coffee or milk.
Gross.
Broken into pieces and baked into cookies.
That's a good idea.
And then wrapped in bacon and cooked on the grill.
Now stop it. Now come on, 425. That is out of control. How dare you insult the Pop-Tarts like that? I am an influencer, my gosh. I'm not going to stand for this. All right, let's give out some L's. We got plenty for this week. I think we might have to give out two L's to the same person. Is that true?
I feel really bad for this guy, honestly.
No, I think it's his shtick, so I don't think it's that big a deal. Don't feel bad for poor Martin Brundle.
You think it's his shtick?
Yeah, I do.
I was reading up on him more yesterday, yeah. It's like awkward interviews where he just like chases down celebrities that don't want to talk to him are apparently like his thing.
He sounds like the Stuttering John of Britain or something like that. Okay. Anyway, so he is interviewing here.
Well, he's a Sky Sports reporter for F1.
Right. And so he's at the big Miami Grand Prix Formula One race that went on over the weekend. And we played this yesterday. He got a little confused. He thought he was talking to Patrick Mahomes. but he was actually talking to Duke forward Paulo Banchero. Here he is.
This is crazy. I've never been to an F1 race. This is spectacular.
It's amazing to be allowed right in the middle of the competitors just before the race starts.
Yeah, now you can see they're locked in. It reminds me of myself. But the real focus.
Okay, it's not Patrick. That's why he ignored me in the beginning. But what is your name, sir?
Paulo Banchero.
Right, okay. Well, I thought I was talking to somebody else. So I'm sorry about that. Whatever. Yeah.
I think it's a bit, man. First of all, the whatever.
The accent does make it sound a little bit less offensive.
Secondly, there's a bunch of funny stuff in there. I like that he says it's nice to be alive and in the middle of all of this. Like, well, yeah. I mean, I guess the alive part is kind of taken for granted, maybe.
Also, Paulo Banchero, we got hit up on Twitter about this.
Oh, yeah. Someone named Red-Eyed Hawk on Twitter tried to give us an L.
Yeah.
For not mentioning that Paulo Banchero is the best basketball prospect ever to come from the city of Seattle.
So O'Day High annoying. School.
I didn't know that was true.
Well, now we do.
All right. Thanks, Red-Eyed Hawk.
I used to live right next door to O'Day High School.
And you didn't know this about Paulo Banchero?
It's a tough neighborhood to live in.
I did, by the way, have it in my notes, and I believe we mentioned back when Duke was in the finals that he was from here.
I'm sure we did. I probably mentioned it over
and
over.
Every time we've talked about it.
Yeah, we talked about it during the commercial break, too, so I'm sorry.
During the commercial? Well, what does that do for anybody? Also, Paulo Banchero is asked about the Formula One drivers, says they're real focused. They remind me of me.
They're equally out of their element talking to each other.
Would you like to hear more of Martin Brundle from the weekend? Here he is. Kind of an odd exchange with Venus Williams. I guess Serena's nearby, but still.
I don't know. I don't know if I can stand the rejection, to be honest. I don't know if I can stand the rejection here, but I'll do this for you. Venus, Martin Brundle, Sky, how are you? Really good to see you two on the grid again. Are you cheering for Lewis? There's DJ Khaled there saying hello to the Williams sisters.
Hello, nice to see you.
Serena, good to see you. So tell us, what do you think of this event here in Miami?
Oh, we love having Lewis and all the drivers in Miami, so wishing them luck. It's the first time of many. Hey. Oh. What's the question?
No, it doesn't really matter. Just good to hear. Nice to talk to you, actually, but we'll want to back down.
Jeez.
Doesn't really matter.
The video looks really... It looks worse, too.
Was that even DJ Khaled who walked by?
It doesn't look like DJ Khaled that was behind him.
We didn't think so at first, but later you see the guy that it looked like he was referring to with Khaled, so maybe he was kind of off the frame.
Maybe.
Or maybe he was mixed up.
Maybe he's just a loser.
The Williams sisters.
Okay, who's calling me a loser?
Big Hamilton fan, so it makes sense that they were there. Everybody was there. Paul Macero was there.
I got to play this sound from, what's this guy's name, Joel Bauman?
Yes, Bob Stelton would know better than us.
This is UFC fighter. This is tremendous. So
yeah, this
guy's a
UFC.
Well, that's on you. This guy's a UFC fighter. And was this after his win over the weekend? He had, quite the admission. Here you go. Here is Joel Bauman being interviewed right after he won a UFC fight.
Last fight, I was tired. I was exhausted. I'm about to launch this NFT that's going to change the fight game. And I put in 30 all-nighters before that fight. I had herpes before that fight, two outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter. I'll fight.
I just don't like guys making excuses.
Honestly, I feel like he took away from his NFT promotion.
Right.
Because that's not the part you focus on.
Well, he also didn't really even say what the NFT was.
No, those two were going to change the fight game. Way too close together. They threw me off.
How does an NFT change the fight game? Isn't it just something you, like a piece of art you buy online?
Maybe it's UFC related.
But how would that change the fight game? Like, does it come out and punch you?
I don't understand NFTs in general. Don't ask me.
Just a non-fungible token.
Try hard and believe in yourself. Anything can change a fight game.
I guess that's true. I want to know how essentially a piece of digital art is going to change the fight game. And then maybe about his two herpes outbreaks.
Why mention that?
It seems like that's something you want to keep quiet. I mean, unless you're talking to somebody personally, like, hey, maybe not right now. I'm having the second of two herpes outbreaks this week.
I mean, I'm surprised that anybody can give interviews after being punished that hard.
That's fair.
So...
Last fight, I was tired. I was exhausted. I'm about to launch this NFT that's going to change the fight game. And I put in 30 all-nighters before that fight.
Do you think he means 30 all-nighters in a row?
I don't. Because
I don't think that's possible. You can't go a month without sleep.
Well, just ask Russell.
That's a good point.
That's a good, fair point. You know, I didn't consider that.
Shoot.
So you think Joel Bauman also has no time for sleep? Maybe it's something to do with the herpes.
No.
Okay, we're moving on.
Herpes before that fight, two outbreaks in the span of a week. I'm here. I'm healthy. Let's go. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Whatever. Doesn't matter. I got herpes twice. Doesn't matter.
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's what I said. This one makes me uncomfortable.
Why?
It's just a weird thing to say and a weird thing to hear and a weird thing to
Well, that's
talk
why
about.
He's getting an L.
Okay. Okay. Fair. You can give,
give him another L.
Loser!
Thank you. All right. All right. I can't decide if I should play this play-by-play broadcast from Chicago. I don't think I can. Even though he doesn't curse, I don't think I can play it.
It sounds way too much like he does.
It sounds like he's cursing, but I, you know, like I feel like we'd be able to escape punishment from the, you know, the feds. But I'll, you know, I don't know who's driving around with their kid right now, so I won't play this. But Gavin Sheets is a right fielder for the White Sox. And there's a line drive, kind of a line drive, lazy fly ball hit to him. He comes in a step or two and just flat misses it, right? It just like bounces off. He just flat misses an easy fly ball, no sun, just a terrible error. And so the play-by-play guy is going, I think it's Steve Sands, right? Steve Stone is kind of going through what happened. And then there's a little reaction. And just as he says the word Sheets,
Gavin Sheets,
the color commentator is saying, are you kidding me? But during the kid is exactly where the play-by-play guy says Sheets. So you hear the beginning of Sheets and the end of kidding stuck together. And it sounds like, as you would imagine, are you Sheets kidding me? But take away the kid part, and it all comes together, and that's what you hear. Now, I won't play it, because, I don't know, there's kids in the car, and I know that cursing is, you know, something that people don't allow their kids to hear. I'm not one of those people. And it's funny, Brock and I had this long debate about this years ago. He was like, you just wait till your kids are older. You will be so mad if anybody curses. I'm like, yeah, not really.
Hear it
I really just don't care at all. And here we are. 10 years later, I still don't care. But Gavin Sheets kidding, it all kind of comes together. It's so funny. It's worth watching.
Yeah, if you find it on Twitter or something. I don't want to play the audio. I don't think we should.
Okay.
Loser! You're a loser!
This one, I didn't see this next one.
Yeah.
Mora watched it.
This is Mora's. So this is the end of the game the other night, Bruins Hurricanes.
Tony D'Angelo for the Hurricanes had just kind of been being a menace all game.
Well, he seems like kind of a bad guy. He's got a bad history.
I mean,
right?
Brad Marchand is truly hated in the NHL for what he does on the ice,
sure.
But off the ice, maybe not a bad guy. He pointed out that D'Angelo got suspended twice in the minors for breaking their like homophobic racist slur policy.
Good.
So he called him a racist, and then at the end of the game, they were losing, and Brad Marchand was about to score an empty net goal, so he got frustrated.
In deeper now. Bruins get to it and will clear. Marchand ahead of the play. D'Angelo threw his stick, and Marchand scores the empty netter.
You're not supposed to
do
that.
So he just, like, chucked his stick thinking that he might be able to block the puck that way, but you can't do that. It would have been a goal even if it didn't go in,
right?
Because that's against the rules.
Oh, if you throw your stick at an empty net puck, or any puck?
Right.
So what is it if it's... Okay.
Well, it's not something guys usually do.
Yeah, it's not something you see very often. They don't want sticks hurtling around the
ice,
generally.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right? So it would have been an automatic goal either way.
Right. I think the same is true in baseball, right? Aren't you not allowed to throw your glove to try to make a play?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, every Little League player in history has attempted this, whether it's just in catch or whatever. But if you were playing baseball at all before the age of 12... You've definitely thrown your glove to try to stop a ball.
True.
Right?
I've thrown a lot of golf clubs, too. Has not resulted in anything helpful. So I think keeping your composure is the right thing to do in sports in these moments.
There you go.
That's a bunch of losers.
Texter says, you guys know that about 90% of the world's population has herpes, right? Yeah, I know that. Well, I don't know if that was the exact number. I know it's common, but it's also not. I would also say 90%+ of the world's population doesn't announce it on national television when given the opportunity.
We also got a text from Boogerbeard, who Bob Stelton has had on his UFC podcast before, who's very well versed on it.
Yeah.
Funny guy. He used to like send these videos jokingly yelling at us on Twitter when I worked on Wyman and Bob for not talking UFC. He says it's not the UFC, but the video of Joel Bowman talking, there's like a UFC logoed microphone. So I don't know. Okay. Some offshoot of them, maybe. But it was an MMA fight.
Maybe he's talking about the NFT not being UFC.
Maybe.
People do need to talk more about those things. Grief aside, I mean, it's kind of weird. But I was telling you yesterday, like, Friday, I think Maura felt like she walked herself into a sensitive topic when I was saying I was going to have a little procedure on Friday afternoon. And Maura was like, oh, really? What is it? I was like, well, sort of an adult male procedure that a lot of guys tend to have in their 40s. Kind of keeps us off our feet for a couple of days. And I don't mind at all. You see, Maura got reddened in the face a little bit. But don't be. It's totally fine.
This Friday?
This Friday afternoon, going to visit Dr. Snip. So we'll see. We'll see if I'm able to make it in by Monday. I know somebody, and this is honestly, I will say, jokes aside, I'm very afraid of this. Like very, very nervous about this. And I know that everyone I've talked to is like, oh yeah, it's totally fine. Don't worry about it. Kind of takes a second. Feels like a little rubber band snap, and then you're fine. Which, by the way, still doesn't feel fine. But I know somebody, and I won't say who it is, who had this procedure done fairly recently at a different doctor and a slightly different version of it. And like they did it wrong and he fainted.
What?
And then he went through weeks of pain afterwards. Yeah.
No.
All because he wanted a vasectomy. So I'm beyond nervous about Friday. So I will, you know, try to work myself through this over the course of the next few days. But I'm very, very, very scared. So if you have texts, only ones that will help me feel better, please do not scare me any more than I already am. I can barely handle this. Let's talk to Brock.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a journalist.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
That's not what I expected coming into the conversation.
Yeah, you never know what you might find on a Tuesday morning.
No.
It's a big day.
Saturday? Friday?
Friday.
Friday.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. You only want positive texts. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. No, I don't want the one saying, Salk, the smoke coming up from down there can feel alarming if you're not expecting. What do you mean smoke? Is that real? Yeah.
Well, as you know,
am I being cauterized in some way?
Very much so. I have very little sense of smell.
You know, jeez.
Right? Well, I mean, I don't smell well.
Yes.
But that was the one thing in my life. I mean, even like the poopy diapers, Molly would just be gagging. I'd go in there. Rescue the day, save the day, no problem. Can't smell a thing. That is the one procedure that I've had in my life where you do smell the smoke. It's pretty intense.
Wow. All right. Well, that sounds terrible, and I'm now incredibly afraid. If I hadn't gone through everything with the kidney stone last year and what they, you know, the tube that had to be ripped out and everything else, I think maybe it would be worse, but I'll try to make it through. Okay. Brock, what are we going to do to wake up the Mariner bats? We're talking about sacrifice here, what we're willing to give up in order to make this thing turn around.
That was the fifth shutout last night in this young season.
I think four of them have been with Flexen on the mound.
Yeah, I think before last night, he'd gotten like four runs of run support or something ludicrous in his five starts. Salky, this was not supposed to be this way this season. This was supposed to be a lengthened lineup. This was supposed to have some pop at the end of the lineup, obviously some muscle in the middle and some fire starters at the top. I mean, that of everything, of all, you know, that's begun this season, it's a noticeable one and everyone can point to it. But that's the one that was not supposed to be that way.
Right.
And that's, I think, what's most infuriating and frustrating for Mariners fans. Although, I'll give them credit, Sunday was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, Mother's Day, they showed up. They stayed through. They were there for all of it. They didn't leave. It was looks like the sun was shining. It was a beautiful day. But, boy, I mean, Scott Servais has got to be at a loss.
Yeah, he's
moved the lineup around, right? I mean, he's tried different combinations. He's given guys rest. And
how much
right
of
now,
it,
there's no answer.
How much of it do you feel could have been expected and can be placed at the you know, at the foot of the way the team was constructed and how much of it is unexpected and you just kind of throw up your hands and go, well, it's baseball.
Well, I mean, the Trevor Story is getting booed out of Fenway Park, yep. and homeboy in Colorado is headed back, and Chris Bryant is at issue. So
I think we were looking the other day, and you'd have to go back and check the numbers, but I think J.P. Crawford's war is better than Corey Seager and Marcus Semien's combined.
Right.
So right? Semien, it's amazing.
Seager, Baez, Chris Bryant, Trevor Story. Those guys would not have been the answer. None of them are.
At least not through the first 3 weeks of the season, no.
Correct. So do I have a problem having both Kelenic and Julio up? A couple young guys, small track record? Not necessarily. And obviously Julio's been fantastic and growing and gaining the confidence every day. Jared's struggling, man. Jared continues to struggle and continues to press and continues. I don't know. You tell me. Does it look like he's got a couple holes in his game that right now, until he fixes, these major league pitchers attack and attack and attack. So I can't point to roster construction. I can't point to the fact that, wow, going into this season, I think there's a lot more concern about the rotation than there was the lineup. And, you know, the depth of that rotation, what if you get an injury? And you know, obviously Matt Brass already been sent down and Kirby is up. So, yeah, so I can't say that. I'm not going to say, boy, this was a miss going into the year. Their roster construction was terrible. These guys got a hit. They got a hit, and I mean, is it time to play the hits?
No, I'm not doing that.
You're not that.
No,
you're not there yet. Okay.
No, we're not there. Okay. No, I'm not willing. It's one of those things where if you admit it, it's true. Right. Like you have to like hang on. And like if you've ever been, I remember this from being, if you've ever been in a job that you don't like, don't say it aloud, because once you do, you just can't keep going in.
Yeah.
Right. Like once you've said the words like, hey, how's the job? Oh, it's going OK. You just kind of keep faking it for a while until finally someone's like, hey, how's the job going? You're like, I hate it.
Right.
And then you're done. You can't go back in. You're done. You can't make it back.
Big finger point to Boy Howdy.
Right.
Who, I mean, early on was interviewing for jobs while he was supposed to be running.
It was quite a moment.
Yeah.
Brock, to Baker Mayfield or not to Baker Mayfield?
Okay, hold on. We'll get to that in a second. Oh, right. So what do you do? What sacrifice do you make?
There was some conversation about giving up some of these morning Pop-Tarts that I've been
devouring.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. But then Maura bought me, in an incredible act of generosity, some banana cream pie Pop-Tarts. And so we tried them this morning, and they're fantastic. They're everything I've ever wanted in a Pop-Tart.
That's because the banana runt was the best runt.
Yeah, because I'm
banana.
Because it all comes from the Gros Michel banana, which is the extinct form of banana. And then as a part of that conversation the other day, a listener finally found me a link, Brock, to buy a bunch of Gros Michel bananas, which Heather and I have been looking for, as you know, over a decade.
Sure.
And so they will be delivered to my house. I spent $80 last night on bananas.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a commitment.
Well, as I said, a decade-long quest.
So Scott was a little bit perplexed.
Yeah, you can kind of hear it in the tone. I'll play you a little. Here's Scott.
You know, Julio showed up. He's swung the bat really well. Continues to progress there, but not a whole lot to talk about this one. We got beat soundly by a good hitting team, and you know, we got to make a few adjustments and get after him tomorrow, and Robbie Ray will be on the hill for us. So
just kind of the tone, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, dad, we just got
spanked. Dad's not happy. Julio had three and four hits. Like, that's fine with Julio, but the rest have got to get going. And hitting, and I see it in Little League, right? I see it with Titus's teams that we play. There is a matter of it that's contagious, like free throw shooting, that once, you know, you start to struggle with free throw shooting, even your best free throw shooters start to struggle. And once you start to hit a little bit, it can be a little bit contagious. And until it is, guys are just going to keep gripping it. And guys are going to look up at that scoreboard, Mike, and see a batting average in Jesse Winker and Jared Kelenic.
How about Cal Raleigh? He's hitting like 050.
Yeah. That's not fun.
And just non-competitive at bats. I mean, just like an automatic out at the end of your lineup right now.
It's not working.
Will you give me a minute or two of Baker, Brock? In my career, I can't think of a conversation or a topic that I've vacillated on more.
Well, this last weekend, by the way, first USFL talk here in 2 days, this last weekend during my USFL broadcast, Mark Sanchez, during one of the breaks, was just like, where's Baker going? He's like, I was on with Cowherd. He's asking me, I can't place him. I can't put him anywhere. Like, where is Baker going? Where is the landing spot after this draft? People thought maybe Carolina only draft Malik Willis. That's not at least conceivable now. I mean, is by all accounts, and they've been consistent on this, I mean, Drew Locke's going to get his opportunity. And Geno is there is kind of the fallback, or, you know, how all that's going to work and divvying up those reps and everything else. I'm gonna be steadfast in this, Saul. Mm. Baker's not coming until training camp, if he's coming. They're going to give Drew this offseason to get a sense, to get a feel. I love the fact that they're all there. I love the fact that rookie minicamp was juiced. I love the fact that they're back at it, and sure seems like there's almost 100% participation from veterans and guys there. So you can get a feel. Mm. They're not gonna make that move until they have more. What does Pete like to say? We're getting the information. Okay, they're giving us the information. These rookies are giving us the information. Drew is giving them the information over the next couple months. I don't see that happening until at least training camp.
All right, good stuff. Thank you, Brock. Thank you for this morning. We'll have a little more time to talk through some of this stuff tomorrow on the podcast, and we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Up in smoke. Got it.
There you go. All right. Words I did not expect to hear from Brock Heward this morning, or really any morning. He joins me at 7:45 and 9:30 every day. All right, from Brock to Joe Fan. I think I accidentally really insulted Joe Fan over the weekend, and I really didn't mean to, but I'll try to apologize to him next. Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710 Seattle Sports app as well.